Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan. I have Mikey and John joining me today. We're really excited. We have a Juice Williams interview coming in a little bit. But first, we got to talk about the big win in Lincoln. The boys went out to Nebraska and got a big dub. You guys excited about that one as much as I am?
Yeah, I'm, you know, overly excited. You guys, you know, obviously we talked during the game, and it's awesome to, you know, when your team actually goes out there and gets a win. Yeah, I feel like this program, this fan base, this, you know, community has been dire for wins, and now we've strung two in a row. It's a good feeling in Champaign. And the even better part is, you know, I thought we played extremely well, you know, on all three phases. I thought the offense looked, you know, a lot more fluid. Dan, your pick of the week, Rod Smith, came in clutch. I thought his game plan, the plays, he definitely out-schemed Nebraska's defensive coordinator and, you know, used Brandon Peters to his full strengths. You know, we saw some deep balls to Bebe, some intermediate throws to John's pick of the week and Donnie Navarro. And, you know, then the running game, you know, the offensive line was moving the defensive line all day, creating holes. Mike and Mike Epstein and Chase Brown both went over 100 yards, three touchdowns between the two of them. So great job all day by the offense. You know, there was never a doubt in my mind when they were out there that, you know, we were not going to move the ball, which is something that, you know, I haven't felt probably since Minnesota in 2018 when, you know, it seemed like we could do anything at will. And then the defense, they did their part. You know, they did what they needed to do. Five turnovers, which is huge. You know, anytime you're plus five, it's going to be hard to lose that game. And then special teams, you know, doing their thing. Blake Hayes with the most outrageous fake punt I've ever seen. Ever.
The greatest clip ever.
Yes. I still would love to know what was going through his mind when he was running.
Still hilarious, you know, every single time I watch that.
I know. I've definitely watched it over 150 times.
So, yeah, kind of building off what you were talking about, Mikey, with the offense, it was a great feeling. I think the only time I was ever worried when in the third quarter, Nebraska came out and scored to make it a two-possession ball game, I think the feeling started creeping in of, oh, no, not again. I can't believe this is going to happen. And then they went out and they went and put points up on the board, and I was surprised and incredibly happy, because then it turned into kind of that feeling like you were talking about of Minnesota in 2018, where, okay, we are going to be able to respond no matter what happens. But the defense went out there and put on a show. I mean, essentially they only gave up 17 points. I'm not really going to count that touchdown that Adrian Martinez, you know, put up on the board against the boys, because that was just garbage time. But yeah, I mean, it was a great effort all around. You had and honestly, the tone was really set from the beginning when Kirby Joseph went down and laid some wood on the first play. I think me personally, I was just sitting there like, okay, looks like the boys came to play. And I was not really expecting that. Usually, I mean, it's not that they give up chunk plays on every kickoff, but the kind of energy that they were showing after that, it kind of set the tone for the rest of the game. And you could tell that they were really, and then of course you get the turnover on the first play. Honestly, maybe we can touch on this, but the refs kind of giving us all, I think it's for all the bad luck we've accrued over the years, we finally got some, you know, just bing, bang, boom, right in a row, three of them, where it was the turnover and then the runner being down and fumbling, but then the fumble was actually called, and all right, we'll just take all of it. I'm good with that.
Yeah. A couple calls going our way, a couple balls bouncing our way. We'll take that every time. They say sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And I think, you know, when the game ends in a W, you don't really care how it got done.
No, as long as, you know, it's a W. But I thought, you know, we did set the tone early with those special teams plays, but that fumble, that first fumble, what you guys, it looked a little iffy to me. It looked a little like a forward pass, but
it was close. Definitely close.
I think you could pretty easily extrapolate from the angle that we were given that the ball was released at the 18 and a half yard line and probably landed at the 18 and three quarters yard line. So yes, in like the reality of the world that goes forward, but in our brains, we can just say that went from like somewhere between the 18 and 19 yard line to somewhere between the 18 and 19 yard line. And, that was a fumble. It was because it was completely lateral. So I'll take that all day.
And the refs too, I know they came out after the game and said, because they nowadays they get asked to explain calls before they go home for the night, and they said they didn't have a camera angle directly down the line, so it was going to be inconclusive. So that's why they didn't even worry about reviewing it, because it was too close and they weren't going to have conclusive evidence.
So they go with the call in the field. That makes sense. I'm assuming if they called it a, you know, incomplete pass, that would have stood as well.
And also, that's just a play that should get rewarded for the boys, because I mean, they read the play well. Luke McCaffrey was, at the very least, you know, getting penalized for an illegal forward pass, because although he was, you know, right near the line of scrimmage, when, if you go back and look at it, he is nothing's behind the blue line or on the blue line when he's releasing that ball. So at the very least, it's just a bad play by Nebraska. So the Illini should get rewarded with, you know, whatever happened, and we got the lucky bounce. But at the same time, you know, it wasn't like it was all luck. We got most of the, or we got every fumble that we put on the turf. But at the same time, there was that one spot on the goal line that Luke McCaffrey apparently got in the end zone, when I don't think he even got, like, his helmet might have gotten in. I don't know. Like,
they signaled the about 20 seconds in. After the play that was a touchdown.
It's like, oh yeah, he's laying in the end zone now. I guess we'll give him the touchdown. That's not when forward progress has stopped.
After they're pulling the defensive players up and saying, like, here, get out of the way. Oh, wait, now he's in the end zone.
Yeah, when I was watching that, I was sitting next to my dad, and I'm like, they definitely blew the whistle and blew him down, and he was not in. Next thing you know, like 20 seconds later, they're clearing everybody out. He scoots up a little bit, and he's in the end zone. It's just, who knows at that point what they were going for, but it was definitely not a touchdown in my mind.
Nope, but the boys still came down and answered, and that's all that really matters. And I think it was kind of emblematic of the game at hand. And Dan's pick of the week, Rod Smith, had an absolutely unreal game. I mean, the amount of rushing yards and passing yards that you have in that contest is a direct reflection on him. And
you see him in the box score? Didn't even have to show up in the box score, and he won that game.
Well, your boy's pick of the week, Donnie Navarro, you know, had the most receptions, so I'll claim a net positive pick for once in our picks of the week. I think we all did really well.
Yeah, we didn't even touch on Mikey taking Jake Hansen and calling tackles for loss and a fumble recovery.
Mm-hmm. Like, not even a forced fumble. The fumble recovery. You got super specific with it, and yet you still called it.
I know. Some little inkling told me that it was going to be a fumble recovery, and
Even though you did miss the pick.
I did.
You sold him short.
I know. I'm sorry, Jake, if you're listening. But no, we all three of us had great picks. And I know we are giving Dan some crap about picking Rod Smith. But I think, you know, maybe we should have somebody pick Rod Smith every week if he is going to call a game like that.
I mean, it was great. And also, I mean, we've kind of touched on little broad factors here and there. But the offensive line, I mean, those boys, especially, I was incredibly impressed, and the numbers kind of bore this out. Julian Pearl, I mean, his first start in the Big Ten, having himself, I know that Nebraska's defense and their defensive line isn't anything, you know, really to write home about in terms of, you know, having, you know, four or five star talent all over, but he was still moving dudes and taking care of business. And it was one of those where they didn't have to just run to the left side because they were worried about Virtus and Julian over there on the right side. So that was, you know, great to see. And hopefully, you know, now it's just one of those where, all right, next week you will be going up against those four and five star talents and a program that churns out guys like the Boses and Chase Young. So you better put your big boy pants on and get after it.
Yeah, it's going to be a test. But I thought they played really well. You know, you touched earlier, you know, the offense just looked like a machine. You know, that's one way I'd put it. It seemed, you know, like they were just dominating those guys up front. And anytime you have two guys going over 100 yards, you know, that it's incredible. I would like to see the stats on how many times as a program we've ever done that. That'd be interesting to look that up, because I bet it's not many. So props to, you know, the big boys up front. They usually don't get a lot of credit. Names probably aren't in the newspaper, but we know. We respect them. And,
of course,
believe number one rushing team in the Big Ten in total yards, and then number two in average yards per game. So in a run heavy conference, that's it's pretty incredible. So props to them.
They did a pretty good job keeping a clean pocket for Brandon Peters. And I thought Brandon Peters really showed everyone why he's QB1 in this offense coming into the season. And that's no shot at Isaiah Williams, who's going to be a great quarterback in his own right. But I mean, he gave the offense a totally different look when he was out there and able to spread the ball around all over the field, make some big time throws for the boys.
Yeah, he did really well, and he had pressure on himself, right? He had pressure on himself from the media, the coaches, you know, the community, because a lot of people wanted to see Isaiah Williams start, you know, after his game against Rutgers. And I'm happy for Brandon, you know, as a fifth year guy going out there, really just looking solid all day long, had some nice runs, you know, to keep some drives alive. And just the offense looks completely different with him out there. And that's what we expected. You know, we talked about this way back for our, you know, first episode, how we expected, you know, the offense to look this way with Brandon running it. And, you know, now that he's back after four or five weeks, you know, it's good to see that come to life.
Oh, yeah. And he definitely gives the offense the best chance at being a balanced attack. I mean, you want to talk about what we talked about in the preview episode. You need to be able to be in rhythm in the passing game, and then the running game supplements that. And even just the distribution of catches. You had, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't like in the Wisconsin game where Bebe was getting, you know, looked like 20 some targets and that was the only guy he was locking on. Credit to, like Dan said, credit to the O-line for giving him enough time to go through his progressions, but good on Brandon too for not just, you know, zeroing in on one dude and making sure that he found Donnie and found Barker and found even Casey Washington. Because there were, and even, I mean, that throw to Daniel Barker on the rollout where he kind of throws back across his body. And I get that that's a design, but that is that's a Big Ten throw. That's not an NFL throw because you can't make that in the NFL, but that is such like an extra dimension of the offense. It's almost like what we were saying with, or like I had the same exact tone when I was talking about Isaiah, where it's like, if you have this dynamic playmaker at quarterback, it changes everything. If you have a quarterback who can make that kind of throw, who can not only, you know, see that the guy is open, but throw him open, because Barker was not really that open there. He had to throw it behind him, kind of that back shoulder turn around so that he cleanly makes the catch. And it's not anything where the Nebraska defender can throw his hands up last second and possibly get them in the path of the flight of the ball. I mean, that's a perfect throw for that situation. I mean, it's why he was, you know, the top ranked Big Ten quarterback in terms of his grades, according to Pro Football Focus. And I mean, that's just, if we get that every single week, then we're going to be very surprised at how this season ends up.
It was really nice, too, to see Josh Amaterbebe make a couple of really nice catches. He had the big touchdown in the end zone, high point of that ball, had another couple big catches for them. So it's good to see your number one target really get involved this week.
And John, to touch on you with Brandon, that's just one of many things, you know, I thought he did really well. And he definitely puts us in the best position to win games. Yeah, he solidified that this weekend. And Dan, you know, throwing those deep balls to Josh, it's good to see that going again, because that was such a big part of our offense last year. And to have those two or three deep balls that they connected on, I was just smiling ear to ear watching that.
And even, I mean, man, there were some of those route designs, not to, you know, go. I did this last episode. I'm not going to try and slip into this too much, but the pass to, he had, there was the one short completion that Josh had. It was kind of funny. He ran, I mean, I called it when I was a wide receiver, a twirl route in the back in the day. It's kind of like a slant to then an out.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what you guys called it, Mikey, but he ran one of those where you end up kind of, you know, leveling out on a yard line essentially. And seeing Josh run, he's, you know, a deep threat. He's not really a route runner, but even seeing him do that, it was really reassuring. And then the second play I just wanted to touch on was, it was a 3rd and 9, I believe. And they ran crossers with Donnie sitting behind. It was actually the play where Donnie lost his hat. And then, you know, got up and was absolutely jacked up. And I was yelling at the TV because not only was I fired up because he was my pick of the week, but just seeing a guy, you know, lose his helmet, still fall forward, get the first down, get up and start talking was awesome. But going back to the roots of that, the play design is perfect because you get those crossers confusing the linebackers and sucking them up a little bit. So then you can have Donnie sit behind them in the soft spot of the zone, or even if it's man coverage, they're getting confused. And then just sitting there and able to, you know, get a couple yards for the first down after the catch. And man, Rod Smith had himself a game, you know, Brandon Peters had himself a game, Chase Brown had himself a game. I will go through and list every single person who had a game because it was pretty much everyone. And it was great. And I, you know, couldn't be happier.
That's the, I think that's the team we've been, we kind of expected coming into the season. So it was good to see them get going. And on the other side of the ball, Lovie Smith talks about the turnovers. And this week we had plus 5. We call that Coach Lovie Smith ball now. We got into it a little bit with the official Illini football account. They were calling
you
it
can
Lovie
tell
ball.
They don't listen to the podcast.
I guess they haven't started listening yet, but we were joking, as Mikey mentioned last episode, Lovie doesn't like it when you call him Lovie, especially the players. So we're not.
He doesn't mind the fans, but the players.
So we're gonna just start calling it Coach Lovie Smith ball when we get those takeaways.
Yeah, out of respect.
Yeah, we're getting in a good habit.
Yeah, it's crazy. Every week it seems like we just keep getting turnovers, you know, and this team lives off the big play, lives off the turnovers, but plus 5, that is incredible. This is another one where we're going to have to look up the stat of teams that go plus 5, what the percent chance of winning. I bet it's 90%+.
So it's got to be.
Props to the defense. Props to, you know, Coach Lovie for calling a good game. And yeah, I mean, all three phases, just pretty incredible.
I think the only devastating part, especially looking forward to next week, is the injuries with Tariq Barnes going out and Johnny Newton. They both kind of look like similar plays where they both got rolled up on their ankles. And I mean, Johnny Newton's didn't seem quite as bad. He kind of was able to walk off on his own power, but still, even if that's a high ankle sprain, then he's probably out the rest of the season. If it's not a high ankle, then, you know, hopefully he can make it back in a week or two. But man, like, those guys were playing really well, but you know, it's just next man up. And maybe we'll get Alex McCarron. He'll get a chance to get some reps on defense after making an incredible special teams play. That was one of the more athletic plays of the game. Like him tracking that ball. Like, think about that. You're tracking a weird egg shaped object, and you find a way to high point it essentially as it's, you know, bouncing around and come down with it and hold on to it. I mean,
aware play on his part. Yeah, very totally. Aware and changed the, I mean,
he kept the momentum.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
If we would have lost that, I'm not saying we would have lost the game, but the score would have been a lot different.
We would have been robbed of the Blake Hayes fake punt.
Yeah. Which led to 3 points.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it was one of those where, hopefully his effort gets rewarded in that sense and some good karma goes forward to Ohio State. But yeah, I think that's the only downside I think of the game is, when looking back at it, probably is losing those guys to injuries.
I still can't get over the Blake Hayes fake punt. I just want to keep talking about it.
Him juking the 35-yard line is the funniest.
I was like, does he think because it looked like he like juked and was running towards the sideline. I was like, does he think he's at the yard marker? If so, why is he running to the sideline? Just run straight.
He must have he must be able to see ghosts or something. Like someone was out there that we couldn't see that he could or something. Because I mean, he made a miss though.
He literally he sets it, but the thing too is he set up the block perfectly somehow. Like, he had his two personal protectors and he's going to the right. The one personal protector that's not using anything is on the right, but then the left guy, he let the guy leak out to the right a little bit, so he somehow just back jukes and in the slowest manner possible starts going left. And then you're like, okay, why is he looking like he's gonna, I thought he was gonna throw the ball. I mean, maybe he could have been setting up the punt too. Who knows with that guy? Like, he's just bringing the ball up and not, but him juking the 35-yard line is something that I will never get over. And I will giggle I will be a 75-year-old man and I'll see that clip and I'll just start laughing my butt off.
Yeah, that was great. I thought I saw in a press conference, apparently he did not have the green light from Lovie or Coach Lovie Smith. Apparently he did not. So props to you, Blake. That to me
takes some nuts,
but that's what you need. Like, that's football. That's, you know, like a senior going out there making a play, like, good job. Right. Like, that's what you do. You react to stuff that happens while you're out there. And he made a play that he thought was most beneficial to the team and it worked and led to 3 points for us, you know, could have led to 7, but good job, Blake. I'm a fan of that.
I think we'll take that. Did you guys see after the game, the Illinois Athletics Department tweeted out, good game, Nebraska. Thanks for bringing back Big Ten football. I think it went pretty viral.
I can't believe they deleted it.
I can't believe they deleted it. Yeah. It was all over the TV. I know national broadcasts were even showing it during the highlights of the game. So it was all good press. And and I saw them backtrack on it, which was interesting. But I thought it was a funny tweet, and it's, you know, promoting an Illinois win. So I was a little disappointed they brought that down, but
yeah, you had like Nebraska fans and reporters going to places that I didn't really understand. Like, they were either super butthurt or super confused, because like, you had people who were like, oh, you know, Lovie Smith and Scott Frost have a mutual respect for each other. It's like, that has nothing to do with the fact that
some intern probably tweeted.
They're trying to get a tweet off and be funny online. Like, that has nothing to do with Lovie Smith and Scott Frost. And one thing that I like found kind of disappointing, like, there was a fan or someone who was trying to talk about the player who got hurt for Nebraska, who luckily is okay. Like, he's moving, everything's good. Mm-hmm. But they try to talk about him like possibly being hurt and having his career over, and you're making a tweet like that. Like, what is going on here? Like, how are you drawing that comparison and connecting those dots? Like, be better one time, please.
I think that's just Nebraska fans loving Nebraska football, which I respect, but I agree. It was just a very
be smarter.
It was just an interesting dynamic after the game when Illinois fans are celebrating. It's just weird being on that side, I think, for once. Maybe they're just not used to seeing Illinois win a game.
Yeah, I do not think we should have deleted the tweet. It brought a lot of buzz, you know, that to a game that probably wouldn't have gotten, you know, as much national attention as we would have thought. But since that tweet, you know, like you said, Dan, it was all over all the broadcasts on ESPN, ABC, all those stations when they were doing game recaps. So props to, you know, the media department, whoever tweeted that, but I'm sure there was a higher up power made them delete it.
Was that our best game in recent vintage, probably just for football, in terms of like social media recognition? We not only had that tweet, but we had the Blake Hayes clip just going every, like, that was the exact inverse of the fourth and goal from the 48. Like, that, what we had happen there is just like, everyone's loving Illinois, and we can just sit there and bask in the glow of having a viral moment because Blake Hayes is the best.
I'm going to say Wisconsin game last year, probably.
Oh, I'm an idiot. I'm an absolute idiot.
I was going to say,
in terms of social media, I'm sure McCourt's kick.
But I still think the Blake Hayes.
That's my
first
favorite
down
play
is
I've ever seen. It's like, I might put a link of it in my Twitter bio, just because I love it so much.
You got to make your banner, like your background, just the freeze frame of him with no one around him, but him like pausing.
Yes. Just, like jump cutting.
Exactly. That's gonna live on it, and at least in podcast lore, for we'll never let any of you listeners ever forget about that clip as long as you live, because that is, oh man, that's such a great football play. But I mean, you were even talking about it, Mikey. Like, you need to take those kind of risks to win ball games sometimes. Like, you need guys, and it doesn't always have to be, you know, your big name guys like a Brandon Peters or a Jake Hansen, and those guys obviously stepped up. But sometimes you need a guy like that, like a Kirby Joseph making a big hit, or you need a Blake Hayes making a play to, you know, sustain a drive. Just stuff like that helps you, you know, win ball games because of you accumulating those kind of plays over time. So, you know, hopefully they can keep that mo rolling.
So here's where I am in my headspace now. Illinois is now 2-3. We have Brandon Peters back at quarterback. Looked really good. And you think back to the three losses. One was Wisconsin, which they're a good team. You know, you got beat early, and you need a little tuning up. Sure, that's a bad loss. You know, it wasn't really competitive in any way. So you take that one, and then you had Purdue, which was a hard fought game where you had a couple backup quarterbacks in there, and you know, you played them pretty tough. You didn't come out with a win, but it seemed to be a competitive game. And then
you had a chance to tie it in the final possession.
Yeah,
that's how close it was.
And I think after seeing Brandon Peters, to me, if he was in there playing anything like he did this week, that's probably a win for Illinois. And you're talking about, you play Minnesota, maybe you don't win that one, you're 1-2 there, and then you have these two recent wins and you're sitting in a positive record. And I think the fan base then is totally seeing this team differently if you're sitting at 3-2. And I think the win did help in that regard. I think people were happy to see that, and it kind of changes the tone around the program. You know, 1-4 is even though it's one game, is a lot different than being 2-3. And like I said, it could be 3-2. So for me personally, as a fan, I'm pretty happy with that win, and it kind of calmed me down a little bit. And I'm excited. You know, there's three big games left, and if you go get one or two of those, well, there's four games if you count the game game 9 this year. But if you go get a couple of those wins, then, you know, finish with a record that's fairly respectable in the Big Ten, I think that changes things a lot.
Oh, yeah. And I think, too, I just think the one thing you have to prevent against is this becoming, for lack of a better term, a microcosm of last year where, you know, you started out slow, you had your nice little run of games, and then you kind of petered out at the end. You can't have that this year when your run of good games is only a two-game winning streak. If, you know, I think I speak for most Illini fans when I say that I don't think we're expecting, you know, to go in and blow doors off of Ohio State.
Hey, don't speak for all fans.
Don't speak.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't say all. Yeah. I said blow doors. I'm not saying that. Listen, I'm trying to figure out where I'm standing at too, because the last time U of I was more than a 4-touchdown dog, they went out and you know, helped this podcast become a thing. That's so right. I'm not looking to completely write them off like I did last week. I'm just saying it's not one of those where you can, you know, when you're looking at the next three regular season games, it's okay, you know, chalking up wins and losses. You can't falter against Iowa and Northwestern. And we're, you know, we're getting way out there in terms of talk. It's a week by week thing. But just in terms of keeping this rolling, you don't want it to turn into, okay, it looks so promising there in the middle, and then we only ended up with two wins that entire season. So I think that's the message that Coach Lovey Smith's got to be preaching to the boys. And you know, if they come out and they do that, then they'll put up a good effort against Ohio State, and, you know, we'll see where things go.
Yeah, and I think, believe it or not, you know, going into games is such a mindset. Like, there's got to be a constant belief that, you know, you can go out there and win. And call me crazy, but last year's win against Wisconsin really allows the guys within the locker room just to go out there and believe that they can compete with these teams. And had we not gotten that win versus Wisconsin last year, I personally probably would be writing this game off. But just because they've experienced that upset where they're last year were 28.5-point dogs, you know, they know, okay, like, we've done this before. Like, let's go out there and do it again. So interesting to see, you know, what will actually take place this Saturday, but got to go out and compete.
Yeah, you get over that mental hump, and mm-hmm. I think anything's possible. And like you said, last year's big game against Wisconsin, now a lot of this roster comes back from that team that won, and they probably have a little bit in the back of their mind that it is possible to knock off a team like Ohio State and back at home where they did it against Wisconsin last season.
Yep. Well, you know, it's one of those where we'll see what happens. And, you know, we kind of touched on that in terms of the mentality in our nice little upcoming interview with Juice Williams and what that will, what that kind of mindset allows you to go through. And he also touches on Ohio State a little bit too, and we'll get to that later in the week, but I think we should probably throw it on over to that.
All right, let's kick it over to Juice. We now welcome on a very special guest, former Illini quarterback, a guy you guys may have heard of. We're talking about Juice Williams. Juice, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure to be here.
So Juice, I want to start with this. Just give the Illini Nation a little bit of background about what you're up to. I know you had a little bit of a professional football career and then transitioned into a role with the university, and now you're out in Washington, D.C., I believe. Can you give the people a little bit of an update?
Yeah, man. Out in the D.C. area, my family, I've gotten into finance. It's been about 5 years now. So a financial advisor, work with clients all over the country, just kind of getting their financial affairs in place. So everything from investments to insurance to retirement plan, everything from between. So that pretty much dominates the majority of my schedule on the day-to-day. But I still try to find time to get in, you know, get some time to get some football done in college. And I still run around a little bit on the flag football side just to keep it fresh. I can still can throw it a mile, so I try to keep that fresh.
You guys, you looking for a receiver?
Hey, get out of D.C., Mike. I'd love to have you.
I think you and I would light it up out there.
It'd be a joke if you can get out here.
I'll see what I can do, but... No, we appreciate you joining us, man, seriously. And it's going to be, you know, good for, you know, Illini Nation to hear some of your thoughts, you know, about the team this year and just, you know, your time as an Illini. So, you know, I'll start off with this. Just from the team this year, you know, obviously another Isaiah Williams out there at quarterback and Brandon Peters, you know, the fifth-year senior guys. So just, you know, let everybody know kind of what you've seen from the offensive side of things, because, you know, obviously there's been some times where we've been struggling, but, you know, yesterday, Saturday, I thought they looked really good. So just some of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so yesterday was probably the most complete I've seen the offense thus far this year. And that happens sometimes, you know, that, you know, anytime you get your quarterback go down after game one, you know, for COVID, and you get, you know, a redshirt freshman come in, it's really his first time really playing and being in that role. He's going to struggle. Then he goes down with COVID. Now you got a true freshman out there playing quarterback, not much experience. So it's tough. And anytime you have, you know, you swapping out pieces like the main piece, it's unlike a running back or wide receiver, even a lineman. You know, you swapping out quarterback to see like every week. It's hard to get any rhythm. It's hard to get any real understanding of what you want to get accomplished as an offense. Who, 9 times out of 10, you're going to struggle a bit. Right, but we kind of see, you know, with Isaiah come back and him starting to settle into his own a little bit. Started to see him make a few plays. Obviously, you know, playing in construction, he was able to break the, you know, break a rushing record as a quarterback, which is awesome. But that kind of starts some level of momentum. That starts some confidence. They give the staff a bit more confidence in some of the capabilities you can do, some of the things you can try to take advantage of. So it starts there. And then obviously you get the starter back, Brandon, you get him back, and you get him spinning the ball, throwing the ball around a little bit more, and the offense is, you know, is pushing the ball down the field a little bit. So hopefully that becomes something that they can continue to build on going into next week.
Are you a believer in the two quarterback system, you know, having a guy like Isaiah come in and spell Brandon Peters here and there, or are you more of just let him ride out with one guy a whole game?
Generally speaking, that's tough to do because, like I said, swapping out quarterbacks is hard for either one to get some momentum. But if you have an offense that complements that, right, and they can kind of, you know, come in and out in the situation on key down the distances and be efficient with it, then if it works, it works. Let's do it. Right. But I'm really big on if you got a guy that's starting to warm up, you just kind of really let him get hot and you let him go. Right. But, you know, this is college. That's the game we play. So, you know, everyone has different philosophies on that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Just from a receiver standpoint, I know, you know, when I was playing, we, you know, had a bunch of different quarterbacks in there. And it's definitely, you know, you build relationships with quarterbacks, especially, you know, during that week of practice. So it's important to get as much time as you can with one guy. That's why it's, you know, difficult. It throws off the rhythm, like you said, when you're, you know, bouncing two guys in there.
Oh, no doubt. So, and you know this, you know, I tell you, even you simply play catch or even flag football, everyone's rotation on that football, the quarterback wise, is different. Mm-hmm. Right? Getting used to seeing that ball spin in a tight spiral, being a little duck, coming out with some heat, coming out with some more trajectory, that takes timing, right? So as a receiver, you want to, you know, get into a place where you know what type of ball to expect on the out route or crossing route and things like that. That allows you to be where you need to be at a split moment. So we constantly change that. It could potentially throw it off. But if you work that system and you deal with that in practice and everyone is on the same page, we know that when Isaiah comes in, it's been repped enough where his ball is going to come out a certain way. Or, you know, if he starts to move around the pocket, keep, you know, stay on the move, stay scrambling because he can make stuff happen. Or with Brandon, he's going to be more timing, rhythm, ball's going to come out on time. So if you can work that enough, in the course of a week, it could potentially work on Saturday.
We've obviously seen the college football landscape change offensively. I think, you know, the last 5-10 years, a lot of offenses now using RPOs. And obviously, you were kind of on the cutting edge of the dual threat quarterback. You had guys like Mike Vick. You had Pat White at West Virginia, Tim Tebow even at Florida. Those guys were guys that did a lot of damage on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
If you were playing in today's offense, you think you would have been putting up even bigger numbers than you did back in the day?
I mean, that's kind of hard to say. Because I like to think I was pretty effective during my years. And, you know, although it wasn't like a national sort of trend where everyone would run an RPO, that's all we pretty much did. So we came, you know, 4 wide receivers, spread you out, and we can be highly effective on the run game. We can go triple option out of shotgun. We can go 5 wide, spread you out. We had a quarterback design play. So we did a lot of that, I would say 95% of the time. So so I think it would have been very, very similar. Now, we probably would have been able to get a bit more unique and creative because, you know, people definitely started to master that offense, whereas we were just starting to – crack the mold into college football. But yeah, I mean, it'd have been fun to kind of, you know, see what that's like on a day-to-day. No people going to expect So to go against a defense that know what's coming at them and still being able to overcome that would be pretty cool.
So Juice, you know, you played as a freshman, and, you know, with Isaiah, you know, currently at U of I, there's something Dan, John, and I were talking about earlier is, you know, obviously quarterback is, you know, as much mental as it is physical in terms of being prepared for the games. And it'd be kind of interesting to hear your take on, you know, how long did it take you before, you know, you were out there reading defenses, you know, not just being an athlete and using your physical ability?
Yeah, so it's that's an interesting point. And I'd say, so I play as a true freshman. And for anyone who knows that, I sucked as a true freshman. Like, there's a lot of excitement around it. I did some things correctly, but overall, I sucked. I think I was last in the country at, like, completion percent. Like, from, like, 39% or something like that. It was terrible. But a lot of it is, as a true freshman, not even as a rare freshman, but as a true freshman, it's so many things that you're trying to adjust to on the fly, right? You're trying to adjust to a playbook. You're trying to adjust to a college locker room. You're trying to adjust to having, you know, 50,000 people in the stands, cameras, play clocks, let alone where your classes are or what time you have study calls. It's a lot of adjustments. So you're doing so many different things outside of what really matters in a game, which is going to be playbook, studying defense, recognizing coverage. So that transition, that progression really didn't start until maybe halfway through that Rose Bowl season. And it was roughly after we lost to Michigan, like a drop punt or something like that. And that week, something clicked. And I started to get way more time into the film room, stayed behind after practice, got some extra reps in. I knew how to practice. I knew how to prepare as a quarterback. That light came on, like I said, halfway through the season. And then that's when the game started to slow down a little bit. And if I'd have known that as a freshman, I'd have definitely would have spent more time, committed more time to actual film study, understanding what defenses are, what's the rules, what's the parameters around defense and how to beat it. So once I got to that point, the game got a lot easier. I became way, way more effective. Not only just running the ball anymore, now I was a threat throwing the ball. Right? You see, halfway through that Rose Bowl season, that's when things offensively started to turn around. We go out, we beat Ball State, we go out and crush Minnesota, we go out and then beat Ohio State. Obviously, everyone remembers that game. And then we just destroyed Northwestern, like going into the bowl season. So at that point, to answer your question, Mikey, maybe a season and a half. Mm-hmm. For me to really understand what the defense was trying to do, how to beat it, and then how to recognize it.
Yeah, no, it's because I played as a true freshman also, and I know from receiver, you know, in high school, all I saw was man, cover two, and cover three.
Yep.
And when I got to college and, you know, was in my first film session, I'm like, what are these coverages?
Yeah. You know,
and just from I couldn't imagine it, you know, from the quarterback where you're actually having to, where you're actually needing to read the entire field. So,
yeah,
you know, a lot of props playing the QB position as a true freshman.
Hey, man, it's tougher than you think. And that's why they get paid the way they do in the NFL. It's a tough position. But, you know, I actually shot Isaiah a text last week after the Rutgers game. And basically just, you know, pushing him to start that progression now. Like, you're a natural athlete. You're going to make that'll come instinctively. Right, but when you really become effective and become almost unstoppable, if you're able to, like, destroy teams, like, in the passing game, whether that's short, intermediate, deep, whatever it is, you've been asking for Arsenal with arguably being the best athlete on the field. I mean, it'd be tough to stop that offense. So we'll see. I mean, I'm pushing for them to figure it out, particularly with him, because I think he has a lot of potential at that position.
Yeah, kind of building off those points, I was thinking, you know, obviously as a guy getting play as a true freshman, you're highly touted high school quarterback, you know, Division I prospect, go to a Power 5 school, you end up starting. You obviously have a supreme amount of confidence, but when did it go from having confidence in your ability to be excellent to kind of being, all right, now I expect myself to be excellent every single down, every single play, making sure that I know what's going on? Was it kind of that same moment where you're talking about where it clicked for you maybe in a year and a half, or is that maybe down the line?
No, that's a good question. So it's probably the following season after game one. So this is at the time we were still playing Missouri and the arch rival every season. And coming out the Rose Bowl, yeah, my job wasn't necessarily to win the game. It was just don't lose it. So manage it. Don't turn the ball over precisely. Don't fumble. Don't throw interceptions. And because we had Rashad Mendenhall, and that dude was like
beast.
Cutting people down. Like he was
just give the ball to him, get out of him, let him get out of his way.
Hand it to him the other way, right? So the second half of the season, like he pretty much, you know, along with me helping and not turn the ball over, he pretty much just led the offense through the rest of the season. But the following year, he was gone. He went to the NFL. And, you know, you kind of feel the pressure. You should be a time. You're a junior now. You have more than enough time to start to figure it out. But even then, it was still, I'm in the film room. I'm understanding coverages. I know the playbook front to back. I know, you know, when the play call is given to me, I know exactly what's the goal. So I'm not just running the play. I know what the offensive coordinator is trying to do precisely. So you go through summer and you go through all of that, right? And I tortured our defense all summer. So even then, though, you go into the season with some confidence, but you hadn't put it to – you actually hadn't executed against another defense yet. Like, you haven't done this live with pads on without the red jersey. So it wasn't until after that first game, we barely lost to Missouri in a shootout. The score was 52-45. We got through for, like, 480 yards, 5 touchdowns or something like that. Whew. At that point, that's when it was like, all right, I got this now. And it's no longer – these are not fluky things that's happening.
It became the expectation for you.
Yeah, I'm reading coverages. Guys, I'm getting guys wide open. I'm still effective on the ground game. That's when it became – the game really started to slow down. And then from there, it just started to take off.
I wanted to flip over to the game this week. You know, obviously playing the Buckeyes, you know, you guys had a – huge win against them in 2007. And I was just wondering, you know, what was the mindset of the team, you know, going into the going into Ohio State, playing the number one team in the country? You know, I'm sure you guys were, you know, fired up, but it's one thing to be fired up and, you know, lose, and it's another to be fired up and to go actually out there and win. So just kind of how was it, you know, take us through that.
Yeah, so that was a pretty cool time because, you know, that season we had beat the number 11 team in Penn State, beat the number 5 team in Wisconsin. So anytime we played a ranked team that year, like, we started to believe, and people, like, the fans started to believe, like, it's a legit shot that we win. And now Ohio State is a different thing, right? Even now, when most teams play Ohio State, they're like, loaded. They got this guy. They got Justin Fields. They got all these other folks. So as much as, you know, as much as you want to be optimistic, realistically, you think in the back of your head, it's still Ohio State.
Right. Yeah.
So number one thing for us was getting that out of our head. Like, it's Ohio State. It's no different than Wisconsin and Penn State and everybody else we beat up on that year. It's no different. Mm-hmm. They make mistakes. We just got to take advantage of those mistakes. Right. So we flushed that out by Tuesday and Wednesday. Guys were really walking around. We can beat Ohio State. We can really beat them. And once we got there, adversity hit. Obviously, they come out and score 80-play drive in 2 plays, score right away. But then we come right back and score in 3 plays. So at that point, that was the confirmation that, you know, they have holes. They have weaknesses. We can play with them. We have the guys. We have the talent player for player. And, like, once we got in that game, it really just became a chess match. And we just didn't make as many mistakes as they did. And we held the ball in the fourth quarter for eight minutes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the ice hit and that was one of those situations, like, all right, this is Ohio State. If we let them hang around long enough, they'll figure it out, come back and beat us. But the job was keep the ball out of their hands, leverage the clock, and get out of here with a win. So luckily for us, we was able to do it. One of the, more celebrated games in school history. That's pretty cool to be a part of that legacy for sure.
So obviously, Illinois, I think the last 9 attempts have been unsuccessful against Ohio State. Last time Illinois was able to topple the Buckeyes was 2007. Obviously, a game Illini fans remember pretty vividly. What do you think it's going to take this week for Illinois to give the Buckeyes all they can handle and bring back the Illibuck?
Yes, it starts with the mindset, man. You have to go into that game knowing that you can win. And much as players might say it, and you got all this stuff around the locker room, articles, different motivations, it's a lot of people on that team don't really think that. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows this. There's some guys that, You know, sometimes you call it cancer. It can be some cancers in that locker room. Just say little things. And, you know, it can very easily, you know, become a part going to Saturday. And the first thing that goes wrong, you know, boom, this game is over within 2 minutes. Right. So it starts with mindset. You have to walk into that building knowing that you got a shot at beating these dudes. Like, just like you just destroyed Nebraska, you can do them the same way if you take advantage of it. So it starts with that. Secondly, because they're one and not just powerhouse in the Big Ten, they're a national figure. They got some great players, obviously great coaches. You have to limit your mistakes when you play against a team like that. Right? They're going to make them. You take advantage of them, but you have to limit your mistakes. Cut down on the sacks, cut down on the penalties, cut down on the turnovers, cut down on the drop passes. All right? Thinking back, we didn't make our first mistake until the fourth quarter. We got a holding call with like 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. That's the first mistake we made. Right. So you have to limit those mistakes, those self-inflicted mistakes, right? Because they're going to do some things and you counter it by not helping them out. Right.
Right.
And then seize the moment. Like most teams like that, they're not used to playing with their back against the wall. They get comfortable, go up two or three scores, bouncing around on the sideline, they're smiling, they're laughing, they're comfortable. But you kind of, if you figure out a way to inflict some adversity for them, you're up in third quarter, you're tight in the third quarter, you're going into the fourth quarter, it's a close game, now you make them uncomfortable. That's unfamiliar ground for them. That's when the mistakes on that part really start to kick in. All right, so a lot of those little things, it seems very simple and very elementary, but highly, highly effective. You can stick around, change the mindset, have guys on the team that's really ready to believe, and make the big players make big plays, you know? And we saw that game. Rashard struggled a bit. I was there to help out, right? Mm-hmm. Jay Layman had like 30 tackles. So, yeah, guys, you step up and you make those plays. You're not afraid of the moment. You don't worry about the cameras and, you know, you've been in a horseshoe and being loud. Hey, you play this game as a kid to live in those moments, right?
Oh, yeah.
So take advantage of it. Go out there and seize it.
Sounds like they can use the how you guys in your season had the confidence against ranked opponents. Hopefully the guys this year can use the, you know, the momentum of the last two games and the wins and the confidence they've built on that to maybe push those thoughts out where maybe it is, because it's kind of human nature and it seems like a more realistic thought, like, oh yeah, these guys are a national powerhouse, of course they probably should come in and beat us. But to get that out of their minds, you're probably right in that, yeah, if you just look back at those two wins, we can take care of them.
No question. Yeah, you use those two wins, you're absolutely right. You use what you started, and you keep going. What's so different than Ohio State? It's just a different name, and it's different players in these positions.
Mm-hmm.
The blitz, they're going to sit back and play coverage. They're going to disguise. They'll do all the same things that we just overcame last week. Just do it again. Right? Just do it again. You really have to believe it. And I just say you really have to believe it. I remember I woke my roommate up. Chris James, he had tore his ACL that year, so he was on bed rest. I mean, I woke my roommate up, he was asleep after practice, Thursday night. He was like in the bed, knocked out, and I went in jumping on his bed. We're going to beat Ohio State. And I really believed it. I really believe it. I figured out enough about them because they're a hard defense to beat. But I figured out enough about it. I knew how to counter it. And, you know, it was all she wrote. So, that was a fun time, man. I remember that week. Like I'll never forget that. So even all the way up until like our hype video the day of. And I remember, you know, you always try to find something that's going to give you that extra bounce walking into the locker room as you change. And our hype video was the movie scene from 300.
Oh yeah,
okay. Aaron Knight is basically backed up against the wall. You know, him and his 300 with 10,000, you know, rebels in front of him. And here's where we fight. Here's where they die. And, like, that was our hype video. He was ready to run through a wall. So, so everything about that, it just lined up perfectly. And, you know, we was able to go out there execute.
Ready to run through a wall right now.
Yeah, I'm ready to go play.
We might need to get that 300 exactly. Video going again this week.
Yeah, after they that wouldn't be a bad idea.
Kind of building off that, what was the back in that week? What was the Juice Williams? I'm guessing it was a mixtape. What did you have rocking in your ears? You know, pregame. What was the hype song of choice?
Yes, I had a couple. Man, it was a lot of Lil Wayne, a lot of T.I. Precisely T.I. Motivation. like popular song. So that was the usually one or two songs I'll have on my headphones loud right before I go out the locker. So So Lil Wayne, Lil T.I., a lot of Young Jeezy, and then like right before kickoff, so we would go out an hour before we would warm up for maybe 40 minutes, go back into the locker room. That 15 minutes or so in the locker room is usually something Aerosmith, it's usually something, it's totally different energy. Relaxing, get your mind right, type music, a little bit more peaceful. I go in the bathroom, say my prayer, and you know, come out the tunnel, then what happens after that.
Yeah, I always had, my brother would send me like a pregame song to listen to every week. He would do it to me like in high school. So I had that like ritual going on with him since high school, and he would send me a new song every week. So I'd always listen to it right before I went out onto the field. So that was like my thing. And it was usually like some Lil Wayne or like some rap that would just get you going.
Nice. Yeah, no, that little, hey, you'd be surprised, guys, like that little extra little bounce.
Yeah.
Gets you over the hump. So play, you come back, you're tired, or even the first kickoff, and you as a kick returner, like you just got that extra bounce. You might have an extra step or extra gear that one play, and that sets the tone for everything, right? So it's weird, man. It's you know, that's why we play it. Like those little intangible experiences, man, it makes the game fun.
Yeah, that's really the stuff you remember. You know, obviously you had some incredible wins, some incredible games, but it's the little things that you do, you know, even just being in the locker room with the guys that, you know, really makes you, you know, miss the game. Yeah. You know, I think of most of my memories, you know, came from just joking around, you know, playing games after practice, just doing the little things that a lot of people don't realize goes on.
So many memories, Mikey, like so many of it. Like you said, I love the one feeling I do have, you know, I had with football that I would love to try to mimic or recreate is that feeling of when you come out the tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know, the fireworks popping off, the smoke is popping off, the roar's there. So that feeling you have, you know, that energy you get, like, I haven't been able to find that with anything else. Like, it's nothing else I don't think is out there. Maybe if I start boxing or something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
still chasing that high.
Can't not that feeling. So, but the conversations that you, it's that feeling, the conversations that you have, you know, doing TV timeouts that no one else sees.
Right. Yeah.
A huddle right before, you know, the cameras come back on, the jokes. And I remember there was a time I had to call timeout in the middle of a play because, like, somebody started talking about, like, my mom, or bra side or something like that. Like, I started laughing. The defense is talking crap to him, and I started laughing. I called timeout.
Yeah.
Cursed out about it, we kind of laugh and joke about that to this day. So it's like a lot of little things like that, man. You just, that's what makes the game so powerful and so fun.
Were you a trash talker when they're talking about your mom? Are you talking back, or are you not tripping?
Subtle. It's very subtle. Very subtle, because we had our offense was all hand signals. We didn't really do much talking, like we're running our play. So right after the play, I had to look and find the signal on the sideline. So I might have had a couple seconds to say something back. And it's usually, you say something to me, I'll say something back, right? So now unless I get something in the media where, you know.
Yeah, be careful.
Yeah. And I might be digging a little bit deep, but that was a comment that was made sophomore year, the week before we played Ohio State, we played Minnesota. And their coaches were saying little things like, yeah, they're a good offense. And I guess they asked him about me a little bit too much, and he just cracked it. He said, I'm not really worried about that kid. He couldn't throw the Uh-oh. Ball.
Oh,
he
no.
couldn't throw the ball Uh-oh. In the ocean if he was standing in it.
Oh.
And I got wind of that, and that I took that personal. Like, you kidding me? All right. So that game, I was a little bit more talkative. Like, I would get tackled on the sideline, or I'd run on their sideline, or I'll say something to the coach or something like that. But,
look to the sideline after you throw a touchdown or something like that?
Run. Arm up.
Oh, yeah.
Flexing. You know, everything came out that game. So I think we beat Minnesota like 42 to like 7 or something like that. Like, we crushed them. But that was the one time I was a little bit more on the edge talking trash. So I'm usually pretty cool, pretty chill.
And that's why football is so incredible, because it's a game where you can play into your emotions like that, and you can let that kind of – like other sports like basketball or baseball – giving more effort doesn't always, like, in terms of like a given play, might not always give you that extra edge. But in football, if you're giving yourself that extra juice, you know, you might be able to bowl that guy over, or you might be able to, you know, get that extra yard or something like that, which is why it's just incredible.
Yeah, you'll be able to do some crazy things, man. You get that extra little something, right? You know, lack of a better term, that extra little juice. Then Mikey was under 200 pounds. You might run the line back over because you got that extra little bounce, and you never know. So.
A guy who may have helped you with that is a guy who's now helping the Illini, and that's Lou Hernandez. He's back as the strength and conditioning coach. Do you think you can bench more than Lou at the current time?
No. I don't know if you've ever seen him in person. Lou is like 5'3", 5'4". Always, all his shirts look like this. Every single one of his shirts. We traveling on the plane. Under his dress shirt, he got muscle shirt everywhere we go. And he just instills, like, this respect. Like, he's not an asshole or anything like that, but he just instills, like, hey, you're going to come here, you're going to work hard, you're going to do everything you need to do, all right? And we're going to go out there and, you know, work our hardest, work our tail off. So with Lou, though, like, he was responsible, and I don't know if you look at that team, like, physically look at us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I looked like a running back, but really as Ben, he looked like a running back. Rashad looked like, you know, Hercules in the backfield. Like everyone else, Vontae Davis, Davis, 210 at corner. And he was responsible for a lot of that. So we ran well, we lift, and we took pride in it. And, you know, like I said, the respect that we have for him as a player, even to this day, you know, he's responsible for a lot of us still being in shape to this day because all the work that we put in back then. So they had that piece. They got that piece right for sure. Like, he's there, and I think he's the best guy for the job.
Yeah, I know a lot of the guys on the team right now love him. Just how he is as a person, his, you know, the influence he has on them to work harder, you know, the motivation he gives to them. And a lot of teams, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, in the off season, majority of your time is spent with the strength and conditioning staff. So when you got somebody on, you know, on your side that's pushing those guys, and the guys are really believing in his message, you know, I think it's huge for programs. And you know, I definitely see it from the guys that, you know, I still talk to on the team to this day. Just love, you know, Coach Lou.
Yeah, no, he's amazing. And to your point, I mean, you spend a whole lot of time because the coaches are out recruiting in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. So you can't be around them legally. Because the training and everything like that. So, but you spend all the time with the strength staff, and he's a great, like you said, personality wise, he's going to push you. As long as you come in and doing your job, like, he's going to be a best friend. Mm-hmm. For the most part, we all did that. So, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of love and respect for that guy. He's a great guy. He has a beautiful family, which softened him up a little bit. He's not as tough as he got down. So he softened up a bit, but. You know, he requires your best, and that's what he usually gets.
Yeah, one of my favorite things to see him post on Twitter, and I got to be careful with my words because he's a big human, and I've said some things on this podcast that would probably get me my butt kicked. But my favorite thing is I don't know if you've gotten a picture with him recently, but seeing like the dudes and you got these like ex NFL guys next to him, and you're just like, man, like he's still, you know, built as all get, and like I said, could put me, you know, through the ground, but it's just so funny and comical because he's a little bit on the smaller side.
Yeah, he's a short. I mean, everything else is like he's good everywhere. He's a short. So, but his personality is so big, he don't seem short, right?
Exactly.
He's a big guy. He's, you know, big burly voice. So that's my guy, man. I love Lou.
Juice, I got a question for you here. I don't know that I know this. I might know it once you start telling me. But how did you get the nickname Juice?
Oh, I got that at birth.
So, okay, so it's been a while.
Yeah, I had Juice before I had Isaiah. I was a juicy baby. I was a fat.
Okay.
Yeah, real simple. It was, you know, my grandmother was like, "Juicy baby, I'm gonna call him Juicy." And as a young male growing up in Chicago, Juicy don't really work.
Nah.
You know, a bunch of bad situations, just saw people tease me about my name. Mm-hmm. So I ended up replacing the Y with an E, so Juice a little bit better.
I feel like Juice is one of the best, like, create a player names. Like, if I'm playing Madden, I'm creating a player. I mean, you had Miami Thomas, another great name. You had Jay Layman. You had Michael Humanawanui. You guys had a pretty good all-name team there.
Yeah, I think, and I joke all the time, I'm very humbled by some of the accomplishments that I have. I think a lot of that legacy lives on because of my name. It's an easy, catchy nickname. A lot of people remember it. Because the truth of the matter is, Nathan Shieldhouse came in right after me and did a lot of the same sort of body of work that I did. You know, I just kind of look at that career, you know, putting our careers next to each other. I think I get a little bit more celebration because of the nickname.
Juice is an All-American name. Isaiah Williams, he's a good player, but he's no Juice.
he got to deal with that for the next 3 or 4 years. So.
Juice, it's funny you say that because if I'm ever, you know, like in the airport, like wearing Illini stuff, and I'll just start talking to somebody and say, yeah, like I played football at U of I. They're like, oh, like Juice Williams, U of I? I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Same school.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, the craziest things, so that'll happen. So I wear my Illinois stuff, and especially out here because there's a lot of DC connections in the DMV area. So I'll have something on, and you know, with our helmets, you can't tell it's me,
right?
Especially 10 years later. So that will come up like, you went to Illinois? It's like, yeah, did you play football? You play sports? Hey, I play on the football team a little bit, and it gets funny. You'll be like, oh, yeah, okay, what years did you play? So I played 2006, 2010, and then it goes, yeah, so y'all had a quarterback, Juice.
You're like, yeah, great player.
I just kind of rolled with it. It's like, yeah, those names all right.
Tell me more about this guy. Wasn't it right?
Yeah, it was like the quarterback was decent, I guess. So yeah, it's funny, man. It's a great experience.
A name that will live on forever. You touched a little bit on, you know, growing up in Chicago, and I kind of wanted to pivot just a little bit to recruiting in that sense. Do you think that maybe Chicago is kind of like the hidden gem of the state? You wouldn't think that would be the case, but with, you know, all the attention that like Chicago, you know, public schools or even suburban schools, they get for basketball, do you think that that's one of those where coaches are kind of dismissing them because they think that the best athletes go in and play basketball and shouldn't really bother much for football?
I'll say the Chicagoland area. All right, precisely Chicago basketball. I mean, it's not even close. You might have a good athlete here and there with the right body that can play football, but that's rare in Chicago. But the Chicagoland area as a whole, right? I think it's weapons or it's key. It's some great talent every year that's coming out of that area. So I think if you can figure out a way to lock down that space and redevelop that pipeline where it's not even an afterthought, if you're ranked in the state of Illinois, you're from the Chicagoland area, you go to Illinois. It's not even a question around Northwestern or Northern Illinois, Notre Dame, it's not a question. And that's what started the, you know, that five to six year window that we had. It started with Mendenhall coming from Skokie, Illinois, and going to Champaign. You know, obviously with me being in Chicago, myself, Chris James, the following year. The next year you get Martez Wilson. Who else came? Martez Wilson, you get Jeff Allen to come out of there. So you really start to, you know, put a fence around the Chicagoland area. You keep that top talent around. And then you can go into Texas and steal one, and go to Florida, steal two more, go to Ohio, steal another. So, and then that's what really makes the team, you know, really, really, really competitive at that point.
It's obviously, I feel like, shifted recently. And Coach Lovey has been going down to Florida, going down to Texas. And there are obviously great players all around the country. So I think you can go around and get talent from a plethora of places, but what would be your sell to the in-state kids to stay home and play for the University of Illinois?
Yeah, I think you said it, stay home. You know, that was a big selling point for me. My final two came down to Illinois and North Carolina. On paper, those were the exact same schools. Need a quarterback, struggle, Power 5 team, both of the basketball teams just played each other in the national championship. So there's a lot of buzz around campus. Young coaches with names, very similar, but the difference was one place I can have my mom come every week and watch me play. North Carolina, she might get one game a year. All right. So you had a luxury of having home field advantage, literally. And, you know, when times get tough, and it happened, you know, you get homesick, class gets tough, you know, you get verbally harassed at practice a few times. You have to lean in your family a little bit. Get opportunity to drive home in a couple hours and be around some love and go back and get back to work. So I think that's the biggest selling point, playing for the state school. And it's a lot of, outside of football, it's a lot of other perks that come along with it in terms of having a powerful dynamic network, right? You guys see that. I'm sure you guys experience that now. You know, having a degree from University of Illinois, it works wonders in the state of Illinois. All right, so having all those things, you know, in your back pocket, assuming you know, that everyone's not going to go to NFL, all right, it's still not a bad deal, right? Mm-hmm. So shoot for the stars, you land on the moon, I'll take that, right? So that's why I would be positioning that, you know, as a recruiter. Again, all the obvious stuff, playing in front of the Big Ten, you know, on the Big Ten stage, national TV every week. So all those things come in handy as well.
Yeah, you get the chance to rebuild a program. You know, I see now a lot of guys, you know, that I don't even think we have any of the top 10 kids from the state coming to U of I football, which to me is really sad because, you know, fortunately, a lot of these guys are going to go to like Alabama or an LSU or one of those big blue chip schools and not play for 3 or 4 years and then transfer out. Like, yeah. You have a chance to turn around the in-state program and be a legend in your state. And to me, that was my biggest draw as well, to just stay home. And then, like you said, family was 2 hours away, you know, great academic school. So there's a ton of box you can go in there and check. You know, mm-hmm. you just got to be, you know, willing to, you know, turn down one of those big schools. And not that Illinois is not a big school, right? Yeah. But just get them going in the right direction would, you know, you'd be remembered.
Yeah. Now, you hit it on the head, Mikey. You know, all those things I totally agree with. The challenge within that is to have your class do it, the following class, and the class. Right. Usually take 3 classes to do that. Because the truth of the matter is, as a high school superstar, you want to continue that level of success. Mm-hmm. In your head, you're going to NFL. And you need Alabama, you need Clemson, you need Notre Dame, you need Ohio State to do it. Because they're going to give you the platform that you need, that winning. I know for sure if I go to there and play well, I'll get the opportunity to play in the NFL. Well, we kind of changed that a bit because none of us was thinking like, you know, in the back of my head, like, yes, I want to go to the NFL, but I want to play in college first.
Right.
Highly ranked as I was, it was my quarterback class. It was Tim Tebow, Matt Stafford, and then I was number 3. It's no way I'm the number 3 quarterback in America, regardless of what this rankings is in. Talent-wise, it's not. I can do some things well, but for me to go to Florida and try to compete with Tebow, no, that's not going to work. Or go to Texas or USC, no. So my thing was, I want to play, and I want to get the best opportunity to play. And from there, you get a really good recruiting class. Like I said, we stole Vontae Davis. You know, we get we had a diamond in the rough with Jeff Cumberland. And you get all this super talent, and you get another class where it really has been Corey Legit, Martez Wilson, Miami Thomas, and they add on to it. Now, it's not just play anymore. It's these guys are going first round. These guys are early second round. I don't have to go to Notre Dame or go to Clemson and compete in a totally different state. I can stay home and have the same exact opportunity. That's what Zip was really good at. Zip was really great at painting that picture. And he would even say little things like, he would sit in your living room as, you know, you're a senior in high school. And he'd say, look, dude, I need you for 3 years. If you're there for a fourth year, that's your fault. I need you for 3 years.
That's a great sell. Like,
what? You think so? All right.
Yeah.
From there. So yeah. Little things like that where it made the difference for us. And, you know, we went down and had a lot of success. And you see, you know, we hadn't had anything like that since, like in terms of where guys were going, getting drafted first round after first round after first round, the second round. And, you know, but that changed the entire program. Because unfortunately, with Zook's departure, recruiting fell off. And, you know, Mikey had to walk into a tough situation.
Yeah, I did.
So, but, you know, but I think we can turn it back around.
Yeah, and you kind of see that now with the birth of the transfer rule and all that, and maybe with it becoming now, you know, everyone gets a one-time free waiver. You maybe get those kids from the state who go elsewhere and see that maybe the opportunity wasn't right for them, and then they could come back home and make a name for themselves. And that's not how you want to sustain a program, but maybe that's how you get yourself off the ground and then, you know, start building something. Then you recruit, okay, hey, look, we just, you know, had 20 guys on the roster who were from the state, and even though they didn't start here, you can start here and you know, build something.
Yeah, you could. I mean, and you know this too, Mikey. I mean, like when you're on campus and you're that guy, you're the exciting player. As a high school recruit, you want to be around. Like, I'm taking my official visit. I want Mikey Dudek to host me on campus, right? And y'all have a conversation. That conversation, you know, hey, give me 3 hours. I got to go run around on the field real quick and, you know, I'll be back to you. You want to spend time with that. Mm-hmm. So you have guys on the current roster that you kind of create that celebrity appeal. They go out there and play well. Isaiah, you know, what's the kid, Michael Epstein. Like, you have guys on the team that are names and you winning positions as you get these kids coming on campus. They want to spend some time with that. So I think that was another thing that we weren't delusional about that. We knew who our celebrity players were, and we put out, you know, the top recruits with those kids. So I have one person that I missed. Every other person, those names on that roster, and I'm one of two my own horn. Every single recruit that I had except one. In 4 years, I got them all except one. There was a kid named Jamie Harper. He was already committed. He's a running back that was already committed to go to Clemson. And I almost flipped him. Everybody, Vontae Davis, Aurelius Usman, Corey Legit, Jeff Allen, Whitney Merciless, AJ Jenkins, all these dudes.
The closer.
I hosted every last one of them.
Man.
But you put your guys around, you know, the stuff coming in. And that's how you steal a Florida kid. Like, how in the hell did Illinois get Corey Legit out of Florida?
Right. You know, would you take him to Cams or what?
Well, you know, we had some things that was going on that we're going to, you know, try to kind of keep. We'll have that off camera. But we had fun. And it was mainly the experience, the VIP experience they got from when they got off the plane. To, you know, them introducing the guys, we made ourselves very human. We weren't big time in the high school guys, so, and they loved it. They saw the potential there. They saw themselves wearing a uniform, and you know, it all worked out.
Yeah, we had Reggie Corbin on last week, and he was talking about how Mikey hosted him and made his 18th birthday really special. So I think some of those same tricks that you were using were still present with Mikey's regime.
And look, it's effective. So, you know, it takes the entire program to really do all that, right? Mm-hmm. It has to be on the same page from the head coach to the player host to the young ladies that's hosting, like, or at the football facility. Everyone has to be on the same page to really start the entire program. So, I'm excited to see it come back because I know what that feeling was like. I know what it's like to be on the beginning edges of a turnaround, to actually see the turnaround happen. Like, it's a fun time. Like, that's, we talk about legacy and leaving a footprint. Like, that's pretty incredible to be a part of that.
Juice, I really appreciate you taking the time. I think maybe we cut it off here before we go on for another couple hours. But
yeah, this has been awesome.
No question. Okay, this is giving me a chance to kind of, you know, keep it fresh. Because it's a good time. It feels great to kind of go back and recall some of those things and those games and those conversations. Even going back on the staff, you know, when I was there in 2014, 2015, it's pretty cool to see those guys starting to create their own memories in their own sort of way. So anytime I get a chance to relive that, I always welcome.
Well, we really appreciate it, and I know Illini fans will be tuned in this week, hoping we can replicate that big 2007 upset against Ohio State.
Yeah, there we go. I'll be pulling. Sure.
Thanks, Juice. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Juice.
All right, that wraps up this episode of The Field Pass. Thank you for listening. If you want to give us a follow on social media, you can find us at The Field Pass on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We have another couple exciting interviews coming your way, so stay tuned for those, and go Illini.